You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you to stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to another segment of the Americans for Truth Hour. Americans for Truth about homosexuality is a single-issue organization devoted to opposing and exposing the powerful homosexual activist movement. Our website is americansfortruth.org, and I'm happy today. We are pre-recording. We're actually recording on April 4th, but this is going to air on April 21st. Talking with our good friends Brian Kammacher and Amy Contrada over at Mass Resistance. Are you guys both on the line?
Yep, we're here.
Amy, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, well, last week we talked with Amy, or for the segment that would be April 14th, we talked with Amy Contrada, and she has a book out about Mitt Romney called Mitt Romney's Deception, about his the relationship to the homosexual activist movement and how he really didn't do, we talked about how he really didn't too much do anything to slow down the homosexual lobby in Massachusetts. And Brian, you have been writing about that issue for a long time at Mass Resistance. And that, I believe, folks, Mass Resistance is the preeminent website exposing all that actually goes on. Massachusetts is ground zero in this movement, and they take pains to use the actual things that are, you know, the flyers and such that are promoted at these events, and they put them on the website. And if you have the guts to go look at what the homosexual lobby is actually doing, I recommend going to Americans for Truth, but also going to Mass Resistance because they do great work.
Well, thank you. I couldn't agree more.
Well, and I'm looking at one right now, Brian, that Amy pointed me to. I had forgotten that you guys had exposed this, and it's just this awful transgender and flyer that was passed out at the Fistgate conference, which we've talked about in previous interviews. And folks, we interviewed Brian Kammacher a while ago, over a year ago, I think, for AFTA. You can find that at the Americans for Truth site. Just look at the archive for the radio program. But Brian, I want to talk about just, you know, reflect on this whole movement. And, you know, the Amy was saying last time we talked about how, you know, she saw this transgender guy, this weird guy with, you know, a man, a full-bodied man in a woman's dress, you know. And, you know, the whole goal of the movement is to normalize perverse behavior. Let's face it. That's what it comes right down to, is getting others to accept a sinful lifestyle and a deviant lifestyle, because men trying to be women, that is deviant. That's wrong. And to do that, you got to really revolutionize society, which starts with young people, right?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, at the GLSEN conference, which took place on March 31st in Cambridge, actually, that was one of the themes. In the middle schools, was we have to normalize this in the middle school, and they were very explicit. You know, has to be, you know, that's their goal, is that it's considered normal by everybody, homosexual behavior. And one of the ways that they do that is through just this very well designed program of harassment and intimidation of people who don't agree. But yeah, normalizing homosexuality. I mean, that goes back to the early days of Kevin Jennings in the public schools, you know, to make it normal as young as possible.
So you've got
the intimidation program is the anti-bullying stuff.
Yeah. Explain that. How has bullying been exploited to become basically a Trojan horse for the homosexual lobby?
Well, you want to say anything here, shall I?
No, I'll let you.
You start, Brian, and Amy,
okay,
you can comment.
All right. Well, to start with, the whole anti-bullying agenda was pushed early on by the homosexual lobby. I mean, I can remember when they were just even starting to think about it in Massachusetts in the legislature. We got a call one day from the Advocate magazine in California, which is this national homosexual magazine, starting to ask us questions about the bullying law that would be coming up. And I'm thinking, why do they care? And, you know, what we started to find out was not only do they care, but the homosexual activists were instrumental in working with the legislature to write it, and they were the main force that was pushing it. And it went all the way up to the National GLSEN office that was sending people to Massachusetts and coordinating. And what we're finding, and of course what we already knew is this was not written to actually stop bullying, because if they did, they would have done it differently. They would have looked at behavioral science and all of the studies that go on and how people react and act. But they didn't do that. What they did is they basically tried to mimic the things that GLSEN had written, and basically ways to force diversity training and other kinds of things into the public schools. And the law that was ended up passing in Massachusetts and many other states was very onerous. Regarding an enormous amount of diversity training and reporting of every minor incident and dealing with it and all of that. And as I said, it's contrary to how behavioral scientists, recommend to deal with this problem. And in fact, right after the bill was passed, the Boston Globe wrote a big article saying exactly that what they just passed isn't going to work. Nevertheless, in this GLSEN conference, they talked about how they use this anti-bullying law to punish anybody that says anything, not complimentary to the homosexual movement, which they now call hate speech. And that's anything. Like if somebody says, "Oh, that's so gay," or even a teacher says anything that's, that they deem as basically critical. Even the teachers are brought up to this, either a person or a tribunal, and threatened with, punishment or what have you. So that's exactly what they're using it for. They're really fairly open about it.
Okay, so let me get this straight. Anytime you see bullying laws proposed that have a sexual orientation element, the long-term goal is to use these laws to basically silence critics in the schools. And that can be, like, for example, the phrase "that's so gay," it's still widely said among young people. I mean, now we're going to put the state in the position of banning that phrase, even if you don't like it. I don't think it's such a big deal. Why should, it's speech, but there are certain things we don't like to say, but we don't put the state in to ban it. And that's what they're talking about here. Even things that when the people doesn't know the full implications of what they're saying. It's just, this is incredibly dangerous to free speech.
Well, yeah, it is. And there's nothing wrong with saying it's so gay. Yeah, but
they stole the word. They stole the word "gay," and they said it's going to be used for homosexuality. I mean, it's right. Just sort of, but again, I'm just trying to put in the minds of kids. They want to basically take an incident like that and turn it into a propaganda exercise.
Well, right. And in fact, when you mentioned that if there's sexual orientation issues regarding the law, in the Massachusetts law, there is almost no mention of sexual orientation. They tried to get it in, but the legislature wouldn't quite be that overt about it. And so it doesn't even have to mention that. I think that just about all anti-bullying laws in the United States, are done for this purpose. It's unfortunate to say that, but from what we've observed, that's the genesis of it. It's always the homosexual groups that are behind it, and they're the ones that are right it and are pushing it. I mean, again, the idea that you need state laws to handle essentially stuff that happens in school is pretty new. You know, nobody really thought of that when we were in school.
But I think to both of you, I want to answer this. I mean, a lot of people would have good intentions. And I don't certainly, if my son bullied a homosexual or any kid, he'd be in big trouble with me. And so, you know, this they're taking good intentions and they're turning it into a very activist, you know, pre-planned strategy to normalize perversion.
Right. And it's not even good intentions. What they do is they take the good intentions of the public.
The public, okay.
But their intentions are, I mean, they know exactly what they're doing. The anti-bullying bill in Massachusetts, and you can go to our website to see sort of a full, full documentation about it, is absurd. It's onerous and ridiculous and doesn't work. But it was passed unanimously by the Massachusetts legislature. Now, to get something passed unanimously by 200 people is a real feat. I don't recall ever. I mean, even Romney Care had a few dissenters.
Mm-hmm. That's because they had whipped up the emotion around the state because
right.
of an unfortunate suicide of a young woman, and her suicide had absolutely nothing to do with sexuality issues. She was an immigrant's child and was basically treated as an outsider, and the poor young thing committed suicide. So somehow that bullying episode became the motivator to pass this law, and everybody just fell into line. It was crazy the way it
happened. Oh, yeah.
Well,
I mean, Amy's right. What they do is they take these incidents and use them, you know, to generate hysteria. And
so that was an emotional bullying of the legislature, essentially,
yeah,
by the activists.
We're coming up to our break here, guys, and we'll be right back with Amy Contrada and Brian Kamiker of Mass Resistance. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Pete LaBarber with Americans for Truth. You can donate to Americans for Truth at AmericansForTruth.com. There's a donate button at the top. We certainly need your help, as do the great folks at Mass Resistance. Their website is massresistance.org. Can you give off the website, Brian?
Yep.
Good.
Massresistance.org. Definitely. You can give off the website.
And
yep.
You want to help these guys because I believe they are one of the most effective, if not the most effective organization out there, especially in the Northeast, trying to do the job the media is supposed to do, which is tell the truth about what the homosexual lobby is all about. And Amy, we were talking off the air about this whole thing of bullying, and I thought we were going to spend most of the time talking about just other things. But this bullying thing, the point you're bringing out is so important. And you said that you were bullied when you were in school. Tell us about it.
The only person I've asked who says he was never bullied, surprisingly, is Brian. I'm saying, I guess he waited till he was an adult to be bullied by other people. I don't know, because there's a lot of people who just don't like him very much out there. But you know what? Everybody I know was bullied, including myself, all my family members, all my friends, everybody. We all have our stories. And in my case, my best friend and I in junior high school were very poor. She was a minister's daughter, no money, and she used to have two or three outfits that she rotated through the week. So the boys would make fun of us because both of us had horrible wardrobes. I wore my sister's hand-me-downs. So, you know, we would hide out in the girls' restroom at lunchtime because we didn't want to have the horrible insults thrown at us in the lunchroom, right? And we had this one very sympathetic teacher who understood why we were eating our lunches there, and he let us do it. And we talk to him and just sort of hang out. But, eventually, you know, one of those people eventually became my husband. But the point is,
so he had to bully you in order to get to marry you.
It was very hurtful at the time because I was so embarrassed about my clothing and all these, you know, it was just, but we all have a story like that, it seems to me. So to have this, this superficial, law passed, apparently superficial, but it has this nefarious true meaning behind it that, you know, we have to understand.
Well, I mean, what I think is appalling is you can protect kids. You can't erase human nature. And unfortunately, humans are sinners and kids can be cruel and they do nasty things. But you can protect kids from abuse and violence, especially without promoting homosexuality as normal. Mm-hmm. That's
well,
just
we already have laws that take care of those things.
Yeah, and why we're school? Point. Yeah, a school. What is this idea that you have to promote homosexuality in order to protect kids? I mean, Brian, this is insane. And yet, bullying is being used very cynically because there are people who just want to protect kids, but there's the activists on the other side are exploiting this shamelessly to promote homosexuality as normative to children.
Oh yeah, and they're, as I said in the first segment, now they're very open about it. You know, they're basically saying, yes, we're using the bullying laws to silence people who are critical of homosexuality, and their goal is to silence everybody and to normalize it. And you know, it's so funny because when they've made it so that if you say the things we're saying, the you know, the left says that you're for people being bullied. I mean, I hear that all the time.
Yeah,
you know, and so it's a great gimmick to for these bullying laws. But the laws themselves, as I said, don't stop bullying. If anything, make it worse. Just by the way they do things.
But Brian, let me get back to what you said about they want to punish speech essentially. And
right.
What about a kid who wants to witness to homo? What about a Christian kid who wants to tell the kid about Jesus Christ and say, "Hey, this is one way for you to not go into this lifestyle." I mean, would that are kids going to be self-censoring on that too, or you know what? This is like hate speech taken down to hate speech codes taken down to the school level. I mean, this is important stuff.
Oh yeah, and they use the word hate speech when they're talking about it. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And of course, they define what hate speech is. And yeah, if a kid wants to do that, or I mean,
how do they define hate speech?
I think it's you know, the way the left always defines those kinds of things. Anything they don't like is hate speech.
Right.
It's a very loose definition. Don't have it at our fingertips, unfortunately.
Yeah, and you know, Brian hit the nail on the head. Anything they don't like is hate. If it's something they do like, for example, you know, we tried to go out front on Dan Savage, this activist who created this vile, vicious website called Santorum.com, and he redefined Rick Santorum's last name as the byproduct, this gross byproduct of anal sodomy. That's not hate. In fact, he was rewarded and given his own TV show on MTV. So if you're a left-wing person who actually engages in behavior like that, which is objectively, quantifiably hateful, that's not hate. But yet, Brian Kammacher's website, Mass Resistance, that is hate. Because they don't like that Brian Kammacher opposes homosexuality. This is the world we're living in, and I think it's tempting to laugh at it. But if they keep going, our First Amendment rights will be gone.
Oh yeah, there's no question about it, and that's what they want. You know, they want that to happen.
They can't handle a free and fair debate where we can just talk about ideas. They have to censor everybody who opposes them.
I mean, the problem that they have is that homosexual behavior in and of itself is, I mean, to put it bluntly, is generally repulsive to large numbers of people, if not everybody. And in order to, you know, normalize this in any way, there has to be this constant stream of propaganda. And you know, this constant force not to criticize it. You know, I often tell people my own experience. They like to compare it to the civil rights movement. But I remember, you know, when I was in junior high and high school, it was in the South, and they had just integrated the schools. There had been a black school in the county, and then there were several white schools, and they ended up, you know, using the black school for some other purpose and sending all the blacks to the local white schools. And in the years, you know, I mean, you know, as time went by, things went fine, at least where I was living. You know, in fact, a couple of years later, there was a black homecoming king and a white homecoming queen at the high school that I was at. And the interesting thing was, you know, and they mixed on the teams, and I don't remember any racial incidents at all that I can think of that happened in my school. And they never had any diversity training or anything. I mean, nothing at all. You know, just they just, you know, mixed. And the, you know, when I think back, that could never happen with homosexuality. They would, they always have to have diversity training. And the reason is that mixing the races is not considered unnatural to anybody. I mean, you know, I mean, it's the idea that you can't mix the races that is actually unnatural and had to be enforced. But mixing of the races is just natural. Homosexuality is unnatural, and you have to have, just like you had to have the Jim Crow laws to keep the races apart, you have to have these laws and diversity training and constant propaganda to keep it going.
You're working. It's against nature, yeah, and you're having to undermine morals. And of course, as David Parker once said it when he spoke at our banquet, Americans for Truth, a few years ago, you have to get the kids very, very young, and you have to imprint on their young. You have to basically steal their consciences and redefine love to them to include homosexuality before the church or their parents, through their parental authority, can mold their conscience.
Absolutely. Right,
which is why we see the very, very young books. I mean, I picked one up at a homosexual event of, you know, those cardboard books, the little baby books. Here, I'm holding it in my hand, cardboard. It's, you know, by Leslie Newman, who I think wrote Heather Has Two Mommies. She wrote Daddy, Papa, and Me, and these are cardboard books promoting homosexuality to toddlers. You have to do that because it's a lifelong campaign to redefine love, right?
Right.
Well,
right, yeah.
You know, the other thing that's fascinating about your website is, you know, you lay it all out there. You just say, I'm with you guys. First-hand information, you can't really question it. They either passed out these grotesque flyers at transgender events, Amy, or they didn't. And you guys put the flyers up there. And so it becomes hard to deny that they're actually promoting these very destructive behaviors to young people.
And they never deny that they're real.
Yeah.
That they were, in fact, obtained at the places we said they were. So, you know, they're real.
Well, I mean, they can't really deny the events. They could say, oh, this isn't, they're exaggerating, or, you know, Brian, how do they try to, they don't deny it, they just...
Well, I don't recall denying much of anything. I mean,
no,
I remember when Fiskgate happened, as gross and disgusting as it was.
Well, describe what that was again.
Well,
without describing it too much.
Well, there were these, you know, there was a...
We got 50 seconds, so basically promoting this gross
there
practice.
There were these workshops that got taped by Scott Whiteman that showed really disgusting... sexual perversions being pushed on kids, and the tapes weren't very good. They were sort of, you know, I mean, we still have them on our website.
Audio tapes. So this was verbal instruction of these perversions,
and,
right?
And the gays could have just said, "That's all phony," you know, that never happened. But no, they admitted it.
Yeah,
you know, and
wait a minute. Not only did they admit it, they charged you with or your group, Mass Resistance, I suppose, and Scott Whiteman with violating the young people's privacy, right?
Yeah, well, that didn't actually work.
How concerned they were about the young people in their care there. We're talking to Brian Kamiker and Amy Contrada. We'll be right back after the break.
Are you sick and tired of homosexuality and gay marriage being celebrated by the liberal media and popular culture? Do you worry about the radical gay agenda being pushed on young children in schools? Are you worried that the gay movement will destroy America's religious freedoms? And are you offended that Christians are called bigots and homophobes just because they agree with God that homosexual behavior is wrong? Americans for Truth About Homosexuality is a single-issue group devoted to exposing and fighting the gay agenda. They are not about hate, but love for God's truth. They are Christians, so instead of celebrating homosexuality, they lift up the many ex-gays who have left it behind and now lead godly lives through Christ. But Americans for Truth needs your help. The gay lobby has lots of money, power, and media support, but it lacks truth. Please help keep this show on the air and educate America about the dangerous goals of this anti-Christian movement. Make your gift online today at AmericansForTruth.com. That's AmericansForTruth.com.
Welcome back to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Pete LaBarbera with Americans for Truth with my good friends Brian Kammacher and Amy Contrada of Mass Resistance. Amy has written a book called Mitt Romney's Deception, all about then-Governor Romney's agenda tolerance and even promotion of the homosexual activist agenda while he was governor. Brian and Amy, we only got two more segments left, and you guys are just – you have a lot to teach the American people about this issue. But talk about bullying, and I want to bring in the politics of this whole issue. The Republican Party now is more and more beginning to either ignore this issue or actually promote things that are terrible public policy, like the whole idea of redefining, revolutionizing the definition of marriage to approve of homosexuality. In New York, you saw a millionaire, billionaire, I don't know what they were, very rich Republican libertarians, Republicans and libertarians, or Republican libertarians, I guess I should say, who helped push that through in New York. Brian, what's happening to the Republican Party? How damaging will it be to the country, both of you, if the Republican Party either throws up the white flag on homosexuality or begins to promote homosexuality to the public?
Well, what you're referring to in New York was very disturbing. While we were in Albany and before, actually, lobbying the legislature not to push the gay marriage, law through, not to pass it, rich, wealthy Republicans on Wall Street were funding the pro gay marriage effort. To the tune of millions of dollars. They had commercials, TV spots. They had, everything you could think of. And it was being funded by these wealthy Republicans. And the ringleader of this, according to all the news reports, was a guy named Singer. Is it Paul Singer?
Paul Singer, yeah.
Paul Singer, who is... a Republican billionaire hedge fund guy, the chairman of the Manhattan Institute, who I guess has a gay son, and he took on the pro-gay cause. He has funded millions of dollars across the country to PFLAG and the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force and GLSEN and
Mass Equality here in Massachusetts, and
overturn Prop 8. And what he did was he brought on these other millionaires on Wall Street, Republicans, to join him in funding all of this stuff. And it was horrible. It was disgraceful. Well, now we're finding that the same Paul Singer is the major money man for Mitt Romney, according to Forbes magazine and basically the whole news media. He's the richest guy who is pulling together millions and millions and millions of dollars for Romney.
It's actually in Fortune magazine this week, a big article on Paul Singer.
Now, when you say this week, that would be
the week of
April 4th.
April 9th issue. Yeah.
April 9th issue of Fortune magazine has an article about Paul Singer, who's a major money man for Romney. Now, this is amazing, first of all, that this is entering the Republican Party, because they're starting right at the top with homosexual so-called marriage. They're not messing around with other aspects of the homosexual agenda. They're starting with gay. And Brian, what are the implications if the Republican Party begins to be the gay marriage party?
It says, Fortune says perhaps none of Mitt Romney's Wall Street supporters will be more crucial to the candidate's success or have more influence on his thinking than Paul Singer. That's Fortune magazine.
It also says that Paul Singer is determined to put a candidate in the White House who shares his views.
Right.
And unfortunately, Mitt Romney has recently recommitted to gay rights.
Well, Romney did commit to gay rights in one of the debates. It was on a Sunday morning, I think.
It was New Hampshire, and he also told the Des Moines Register newspaper that he didn't have a problem with Des Moines Hotel.
Yes, he acquiesced to homosexuals in the military after that.
This was also in one of the evening debates, too. And actually, this is one of the few things that he's been consistent on the whole time. He's never that I can recall, not claimed to be for this.
But for homosexuals in the military?
Well, no, I mean just general what he calls gay rights. He's just more energetic about it right now and more enthusiastic, it seems. But this is a big problem in the Republican Party. The Republican Party is starting to cave on this issue throughout the party. And you know, if Mitt Romney is the nominee, you can expect that to happen at a more accelerated pace. And we're in big trouble.
Well, it's sort of like Nixon going to China, right? I mean, recognizing China. The homosexual lobby would love Republicans to be promoting its agenda. You know, the media darlings are the log cabin Republicans, and now recently there's a group called Go Proud. They always get lots of media support because liberals understand that if you have Republicans promoting bad social policy or sinful social policy like so-called homosexual marriage, I call it sodomy-based marriage, so-called. If you have Republicans promoting it, you have a much greater chance of it getting pushed through.
Right.
That's exactly what Romney said when he was running against Ted Kennedy for the U.S. Senate back in 94. He said, look, I could be better for you guys on gay rights because I'm a Republican.
Yeah, which is weird because he's Mormon. And certainly back then, I don't know, I think it's changed now. We're in the process of seeing the Mormon Church, and I need to do a program on this. There has been a change with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Church. Back then, they didn't support rights based on homosexuality. So back then, was Romney a bad Mormon? I believe now they do support, Brian and Amy, they do support, they supported the Salt Lake City so-called gay rights law.
That's right. And supposedly that had a lot to do with Romney pushing for that, the Salt Lake City non-discrimination ordinance. I've talked to a lot of Mormons, and I think there's a big split between the leadership and grassroots, rank-and-file Mormons. I think the rank-and-file people are very conservative yet, and people like Romney and the leadership are leading this in this new direction, unfortunately.
Wow. Now, but back then, when he said that about Ted Kennedy,
right,
what was that?
He was off the reservation, I think.
That was way off.
Yeah.
wow. So basically, the Republican Party has become the battleground. And once again, Brian, it's the homosexual activists who are the aggressors in the sense that we are forcing to play defense. And, you know, as opposed to the Republican Party, you know, and I'm not saying we're not partisan here. We would love the Democratic Party to promote wholesome family values. But people sort of associate that with the Republican Party, and now it seems to be crumbling. Is that an exaggeration, Brian?
No, I don't think it is. You know, I have a friend who, a big political guy, who said that, these days there's two major parties in the country. There's the pro-gay party and the gay party. And the Republicans are the latter.
Explain that. What does he mean by that?
Well, there seemed, you had this, what was his name, Melman, who was the recent, was it party chairman?
Yeah.
Who was, you know, gay activist.
He came out as an open homosexual, but
right.
He said that before he'd been lobbying against the federal marriage amendment. Is that right?
Right. And it seems that there are more out Republicans than there are out Democrats.
Well, in the case of this fellow who's the big money man, I think he's a typical example, too. It appears that because of his son being homosexual, that's what made him become a major, major donor to the cause. So many of the people have friends or family members, and they just, you know, they figure that if they love them, they have to support whatever they want. So
it's false love. First of all,
right.
I love you so much, son, that I'm going to support homosexuality all across the globe.
Right. I mean, it's as if, you know, you had a son who was a drug addict, and so you were, you know, crusading to overturn the drug laws. Or, you know, an alcoholic, the drunk driving laws. You know, they think that because they're, you know, his son is this way, that all of us need to change our moral structure and degrade society for him.
Yeah,
you know, it's very selfish.
But it's another illustration of how this movement is different from the pro-life movement. It's more personal, and more people make terrible compromises based on personal relationships that they have, either with a son or a sister, brother. And the homosexual movement has wisely cynically, I would say, exploited this, the politics of personal association to promote homosexuality everywhere, and it's working. And many people on our side don't have an answer.
Right. Yeah.
But you've seen it now. What is the Republican Party like in Massachusetts? It's certainly not anything close to a typical normal Republican Party, right?
Let me put it this way. In Maryland, the minority Republican leader in the Senate was forced to resign his leadership position because he supported civil unions. In Massachusetts, that's the norm. I mean, that's the minimum that's expected of you. And
as a Republican,
the leadership here all supports gay marriage.
Not the Republican leadership.
Yeah, the Republican leadership.
The Republican leadership in Massachusetts all supports sodomy-based so-called homosexual marriage?
Yeah, and the minimum that's expected of you is to support civil unions.
Ugh.
So that's the way it is here. I mean, it's terrible. And it didn't used to be that way. But, you know, you have the lieutenant governor candidate in the recent election, the GOP, Richard Tessay, open homosexual, supported the whole agenda, the transgender bill and all of that other stuff. Now he's running for Congress.
Transgender bill. Oh, by the way, Mitt Romney's chief legal counsel that we've talked about, who gave the support to the gay marriage.
30 seconds, Amy.
Oh, yikes.
Well,
he was the one lone Republican who voted for the transgender rights bill. So that's
okay.
A new direction beyond gay marriage.
Okay, so wait a minute. So Romney's then Governor Romney's senior legal advisor was the lone vote for the transgender activist bill.
in 2011, right when he became a state rep.
Yeah, just more encouraging news. Folks, we're talking to Brian Kamiker and Amy Contrada from Mass Resistance. Their website is massresistance.com. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back, folks, to the last segment with my good friends Amy Contrada and Brian Kamiker of Mass Resistance. Their website, massresistance.com. Both you, Brian and Amy, is it the goal of these so-called progressive, social progressive Republicans, which I believe are actually regressive? I don't believe supporting homosexuality is progressive, but they want to make the rest of the party more tolerant of the homosexual activist agenda, right?
Oh, definitely.
And so you got, now what happened with Scott Brown? He was the senator there. He promised, tell us about Scott Brown, how he sold out on gay rights.
Well, Scott Brown, when he was campaigning, to be the 41st vote against Obamacare, he campaigned on not repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Campaigned on it. It was on the voter guide, full thing. Well, guess what happens when he gets in there? He votes to repeal it. And then he claimed that he never actually was against repealing it, which was an obvious lie. I mean, of course he was.
And when the bill was signed, the big signing ceremony, Scott Brown invited top homosexual activists here in Massachusetts to join him at the signing ceremony.
So basically he lied. He lied to his constituents when he said he was going to stand up against the homosexualization of the military. But he's not alone, folks. I was just in North Carolina for a while, and they have their Senator Burr. I can't remember his first name, but he's flipped on homosexuals in the military. And people were like, "What's this all about?" It's one thing if it's Massachusetts, but North Carolina's senator voted to open up homosexuality in the armed forces. I mean, obviously there's something going on, and there's a huge push. Mainly, I think, by libertarians, but also the media is pushing the Republican Party to go left on homosexuality.
But
and this is
might it also have to do with potential donors like this man in New York?
Oh, I think it has a lot to do
given
with that.
Multi millions to the organizations and candidates that he likes.
You're talking about Paul Singer, but there's I can't remember now the guy who's one of the big political advisors. He floated the idea, a political pundit. He floated the idea. The name is going to come to me. He floated the idea of of homosexual of the Republican Party it being pro same sex so-called marriage.
Was this Breitbart?
No, it wasn't Breitbart. Although Breitbart was pro, he called him. He was in favor of the so-called gay conservatives. But this is a the guy who's the world's leading statistician on politics, Michael Barone.
Oh, really?
Michael Barone floated the idea positively. He's in favor of the Republican Party embracing so-called homosexual marriage, and you know, sort of upscale conservatism, they're calling it. This idea that you know, hey, you know, this is where society is moving, so the Republican Party has to get ahead of the game, and you know, this wouldn't this kill the base? The grassroots pro family base. I mean, they're counting on Republicans to be pro family. What would be the what's going to happen if they keep slipping on this, Brian?
Yeah, I think what's starting to happen now is the base is seeing the Republican Party as not much different than the Democratic Party.
Yeah,
you know, and they're just two equally bad choices almost, and. I think people are going to start voting for their favorite candidates, or else if the candidate isn't good, not voting for the party, but just staying out of it.
Well, on that point, let me just bring that up, and I want both of you to comment on this. You will notice that the homosexual issue was incredibly downplayed in the whole in the way this this presidential election has been covered. You know, I'm not saying this because I'm for or against Romney. I'm saying, but when Romney came out and said he was for homosexuals in the military, that should have been a big story. I mean, just for the whole debate. I mean, remember, it was 1994, I believe, when homosexuals in the military, when Clinton tried to homosexualize the military, that was something that ushered in a Republican sweep in the congressional elections. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Now here we are 15, 16, 17 years later, and all of a sudden homosexuals in the military is not even an issue. I mean, what's going on here? They are intentionally saying the media with the media complicity, but also I would say, you know, more establishment Republican types. They don't want this to be an issue among Republicans.
Well, I think part of it is that the homosexual lobby is relentless.
Yeah,
on lobbying the Republicans. That's what happened to Scott Brown. They just wouldn't. They were relentless, and our side isn't. And our side, you know, with the media and the culture and everything, is being softened to this issue. You know, with the TV programs and everything else, and you know, there's just not that that push as much as they're used to.
The will to resist is deflated,
right.
Is what you're saying.
That's exactly it.
Yeah, but that's life in the big city, activists. You know, you get used to it. If you can't argue your case, then, I mean, come on. Now we saw troubling things. For example, Fox News beginning to go soft on the issue. Megyn Kelly is promoting transgenderism. That was terrible. I will talk about that in another show. But, I mean, let's face it. Among, I would say, the conservative elites, it's no longer fashionable to be just principally against the promotion of homosexuality. And shame on them if they're calling themselves conservatives, because you cannot be a true conservative and promoting homosexuality rights based on perversion as an issue.
No, you're absolutely right. And I believe personally that without the constant pressure, without the constant media, that this would never last and will never last. You know, but for the time being, it's terrible. You know, and you know, there will come a time in the future when we all look back on this and say, we can't believe that these politicians were so stupid. But you know, for the time being, it's a big problem.
Amy, as a woman, talk about, you know, the soccer mom phenomenon, the idea that, well, you know, I found that many white professional women are sometimes seems more inclined to support aspects of the agenda. I mean, what do you think is going to what's happening with this shakeout in the Republican Party of, you know, we got a couple minutes left. How do you see it playing out yourself?
I'm just really depressed about it, because what I see people doing is averting their eyes to the ugliness. I think both on the abortion issue and the homosexuality issue, I think what women are doing with the abortion issue, they either know somebody or they've had one themselves, and they have to justify it.
Yeah, but Amy, if I could interrupt you, on the abortion issue, we're gaining. We're winning.
I'm not so sure.
Well, I mean the polls show that young people are more likely to be more
not.
Pro-life and yet more pro-homosexual at the same time. And I think part of that is just the intense, as Brian was saying, the intense brainwashing going on in the culture, especially towards young people. But obviously there's some momentum on our side on the life issue that's just on the that is on the other side on the homosexual issue.
I'm not so sure we're gaining as much as you'd like to think on the abortion issue. I mean, I'm not seeing the laws change. I'm not seeing
there's lots to be done,
like,
for sure.
And what I'm seeing with the homosexual thing is, or the transgender phenomenon, is that people who do in their guts have traditional values on this, and there's this ick factor for us.
Yeah.
We're not allowed to acknowledge the ick factor. We're not allowed to even think about it. We're told to think about other things, like, oh, it's about who they love. So it's this whole diversionary phenomenon that Brian's talking about. The propaganda is just so powerful that it's actually having an effect on people who would be normally very conservative in their attitudes. They've been told to not even think about the icky aspects of it.
In other words, don't think about the actual behavior.
Yes.
And they've allowed to make the debate abstract. Oh, we're talking about, like, the marriage equality, discrimination.
It's all about love, you know, let them love who they want. So all of the young people there, getting back to your young person issue phenomenon, they're all into love and sex. So, you know, oh, well, what's good for that person? I'm not going to say anything about that.
Well, unfortunately, guys, we've got to leave it there, but thanks for being on the show, you guys. Thanks for all your good work. You can go to massresistance.com and see what the tremendous work that Brian Kamiker and Amy Kondrata are doing. Visit our website as well. You can hear the archived interviews at americansfortruth.org. Go out and do some good. Thank you, guys.
You were listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Tune in each Saturday night at midnight to hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. The Americans for Truth Hour will help you stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a city shining on a hill. And once again, one nation under God.